SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to. From the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water. Yura Damarang, hello, I'm your host Luana Gran and welcome to NITV Radio for this Wednesday, the 17th of July. Coming up on today's show, NITV Radio chats to Leela Smith, Aurora Education Foundation CEO, about the recently announced scholarships to support Indigenous health professionals and researchers to complete postgraduate studies or research in a cancer-related field. And we share a few stories from our NITV news team. All these stories coming up after the latest news headlines.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, the First Peoples Assembly of Victoria reveals it's ready to negotiate on a treaty with state government. IS claiming responsibility for deadly attack on Muslim mosque. And Indigenous and non-Indigenous teenagers preparing to compete in nations of origin. The First Peoples Assembly of Victoria has revealed it's ready to negotiate on a treaty with the state government. In 2022, a treaty negotiation framework was established to allow traditional owners to advise on priorities for their area and the Assembly to negotiate big-picture structural reforms. The purpose of a treaty is to acknowledge the sovereignty of First Nations and to improve the lives of First Peoples. Both the Assembly and government will require to satisfy the independent treaty authority that they are upholding certain standards. Local Indigenous leaders have called for governments to properly invest in grassroots solutions for Alice Springs instead of relying on curfews and more policing. The remarks come after the second curfew in Alice Springs this year in response to violent incidents. Arrernte man William Tillmouth is the founding chairman of the NT Indigenous Children's Advisory Group, Children's Ground. He told NITV's The Point that more resources need to go into prevention, such as the work Children's Ground is doing with early learning programs. Meanwhile, the Northern Territory Attorney General, Chancey Paik, says the police have the powers they need to respond to assaults, including knife crime, after an incident in Katherine involving an offender with an edged weapon. NT police allege a group of 10 youths unlawfully entering a residence in Katherine South. Officers are still searching for the offenders. Mr. Paik says he rejects the call by the country Liberal Party for changes to so-called wanding laws involving checks for knives and other weapons in public places.
This is the same CLP that said the curfew laws are too punitive. So on one hand, they say curfew is too punitive, and on the other, they wanted to make it easier for police to be able to wand people. Police still have their powers to stop anyone and search them if they believe they commit an offence, will commit an offence, or are committing an offence. That gives them every power they need to stop and search someone.
IS is claiming responsibility for a deadly attack on a Muslim mosque in Oman. 9 people have died in the attack, including 3 suicide attackers. They fired on worshippers and exchanged gunfire with Omani security forces. More than 30 civilians and 5 Omani security personnel were injured. The attackers raised fears IS may be trying to gain a foothold in new territory. Kevin Rudd says Australian preparations for a possible second term for Donald Trump as President of the United States are well underway. Dr. Rudd, now Australian Ambassador to the United States, is in Milwaukee for the ongoing national convention of Mr. Trump's Republican Party. He says he's been in frequent contact with many people who may be key appointments of Mr. Trump if he gets back into power, including the potential next vice president.
Most recently, I've had a text exchange with Senator J.D. Vance,
and certainly conveyed to him my comments immediately following the assassination attempt on Saturday. So I think you'll find there's a wide fabric of relationships between myself as ambassador and a vast array of individuals who would be likely to form the nucleus of an incoming Trump administration.
Dr. Rudd is dismissing reports of conflict between himself and Mr. Trump. In an interview in March, Mr. Trump said Mr. Rudd was unintelligent and that he had heard Mr. Rudd was a bit nasty. But Dr. Rudd says many people have made contentious remarks about Mr. Trump in the past, including John Howard and Tony Abbott, on the conservative side of politics. Federal Energy Minister Chris Bowen says nuclear energy and renewable energy are not compatible and Australians have to choose one or the other at the next federal election. Mr. Bowen will address the National Press Club in Canberra today. In his speech, he will say the incompatibility of nuclear and renewables means the federal opposition's energy policy is nonsense. He says their pursuit of nuclear energy to be delivered in 2 decades' time will wreck investment in solar and wind energy now. Last month, federal opposition leader Peter Dutton unveiled plans to take the next election to policy of building 7 nuclear plants at the sites of coal-fired power stations. Telstra has been fined $1.5 million for putting customers at risk of being scammed and falling victim to fraud. The Australian Communication and Media Authority says Telstra failed the required identification authentication for more than 168,000 high-risk customer interactions between August 2022 and April 2023. Companies like Telstra are required to protect customers by verifying their identities through multi-factor identity authentication before allowing them to proceed with transactions that could compromise their accounts, such as resetting passwords or requesting a replacement SIM card. Telstra has committed to having an independent consultant review its compliance with these rules and make improvements where needed. The Australian Olive Association has revealed why the price of olive oil appears to be so expensive recently. It says local production fills only half of the total demand for the product, and it's been affected in some areas by frost, routine pests and diseases. Chief Executive of the Australian Olive Association, Michael Southern, says the other half is sourced from overseas, where olive oil prices are at a high record level.
The majority of the imported olive oil comes from Spain. And Spain's experienced a drought for the last 2 years, which has really tightened supply. And so as a result, there's just less olive oil coming into Australia and its supply is tight and demand has kept up. So prices have gone up.
Spain has seen more favourable weather recently for the fruit, which should increase production and keep retail prices lower. The first Australian woman to become an astronaut, Catherine Bennell-Pegg, says she hopes her story inspires other females to pursue a career in STEM. The 39-year-old mother of two has recently graduated from the European Space Agency Astronaut Program, one of the final 6 to graduate from a process that involved 22,500 other initial applicants. Bennell-Pegg undertook her first public engagement since graduating in Sydney with a meet and greet with fans at Pitt Mall. She says her training was challenging but also rewarding.
So you have to be an all-rounder. So we studied science, engineering, like tradie stuff, medicine. We studied like expeditionary activities like winter survival, ocean survival, rescue. We learned to scuba dive deep in pools to practice spacewalk techniques. It's been a wild ride. Well, I passed, so yeah, it's doable. Absolutely. Me and all my class got through it together. It was a great team spirit. And I look forward to maybe one day flying with some of them in space. We'll see.
And in football, Gareth Southgate has resigned as manager of the England men's team. Southgate has been in the job since 2016, presiding over some of England's most successful results since they won the 1966 World Cup. He took the side to back-to-back European Championship finals, a World Cup semi-final in 2018 and a World Cup quarter-final in 2022. and more than 1,400 Indigenous and non-Indigenous teenagers are preparing to compete in a round-robin tournament in Western Sydney. PCYC Nations of Origin is held over 4 days starting today and is a sport, cultural education and leadership program held annually close to NAIDOC Week to recognise the history, culture and achievements of First Nations peoples. The sporting codes featured include the rugby league, football fives, basketball, netball and gymnastics. Jamie Owers is the operations manager for PCYC New South Wales. He told NITV it's amazing to see the impact of engaging youth.
Being in the South Sydney area, obviously we have a high Indigenous community there, and it's making sure that we have that community connection with the non-Indigenous members of our organisation as well. Making sure that we break down those barriers has taken a bit of time and taken a bit of effort. The young ladies in this case with the female team, there are different restrictions in regards to their attendance at school that they have to achieve, which is an 80% attendance rate, making sure that they're actual leaders of our community.
And now for a look at today's weather. Broome, sunny 30. Perth, showers increasing 22. Adelaide, a shower or two 14. Melbourne, showers 14. Hobart, a shower or two 10. Albury, Wodonga 15. Canberra, a possible shower 13. Wollongong, a shower or two 17. Sydney, much the same 19. Newcastle, a shower or two 19. Brisbane, partly cloudy 17. Townsville, sunny 24. Cairns, mostly sunny 25. Alice Springs, mostly sunny 16. Darwin, sunny 30. And the Torres Strait Islands, also sunny 29. And that is NITV Radio News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Luana Grant, and you're listening to NITV Radio. Still to come on the show, NITV Radio chats to Leela Smith, Aurora Education Foundation CEO, about the recently announced scholarships to support Indigenous health professionals and researchers to complete postgraduate studies or research in a cancer-related field. But first, here are a few stories from our NITV news team. Traditional owners of one of the most remote communities in Australia's north are finding new ways of developing their local economy using traditional knowledge of bush medicine. Reporter Emma Kellaway travelled to the Tiwi Islands north of Darwin.
For the Rankau clan group, the vast bushland on their Tiwi Island home serves as their backyard and doubles as nature's chemist.
Oh, yes, that's the one.
The bloodwood tree is native to the Tiwi Islands. Its sap, also known as kino, has traditionally been used to heal external wounds.
When someone has a scabies, and then when you put the cream on the scabies, it will clean it after 2 days and then it go away.
It's one of more than a dozen known medicinal plants found on the islands, knowledge that's been passed down for generations.
All those knowledge is a part of our Tiwi Foundation. It was given us by ancestors.
Now, for the first time, Tiwi traditional medicines could be mass-produced.
We're really the experts in herbal medicines, so we process probably over 200 herbs from other parts of the world, but none from Australia.
To change that, Menzies School of Health researchers has been working with industry partners to test dozens of Tiwi plant samples. They say the results have been exciting, with three plants expected to reach global markets in the next 2 years.
After getting all the raw materials, we end up with getting this, either in like tablets or capsules forms, or also like in cosmetic forms. It could be like creams, gels, ointments, anything.
The next step is getting approval from the medical regulator, a critical process that's both costly and complex.
We basically want to validate the traditional use by providing the science to show why they they work.
Proving the traditional science could be transformative for Western medicine and for the Tiwi Island community of Rangku. As one of the most isolated communities in the country, prospects for steady employment are limited.
This project, it means a lot to me and my people. At the moment, there's no project for my people to work.
Construction is currently underway to revamp the housing infrastructure for the around 50 people that live here, with hopes the new business ventures will bring the jobs and resources needed to sustain the community.
I want to see my people come back and living back home.
In Rangku, Emma Calloway, NITV News.
Torres Strait Islander climate change campaigner Yessie Mosby is calling on all Pacific nations to unite in the fight against climate change. Speaking at the recent 13th Festival of Pacific Arts and Culture in Hawaii, the Kalkagal man has said coming together is the only way smaller island nations will be heard.
Yessie Mosby is determined to see results in the war against climate change in the Pacific. He's already seen the devastating effects on his homeland, Marsig Island, in the Torres Strait.
Within the last 2 years, we've lost 3 metres of land. It affects our traditional way of practice and the way of living.
To the families from speaking at the recent FESPAC gathering in Hawaii, Yessie is encouraging Indigenous peoples in the Pacific region to think about other island nations in their pursuit of climate justice.
Nothing has been heard now, because they're moving singly. If they all come together and join, that's what we're asking for, to come and join us.
Yessie knows that victory is possible. In 2022, he and a group of seven others from the Torres Strait Islands successfully lodged a complaint against the Australian government to the United Nations Human Rights Council.
It set a precedent throughout the world, knowing that a lot of other islands and other Indigenous people will eat the fruit of this labour, that they will seek, you know, climate justice for their home.
Despite their win at the UN, the Torres Strait Eight never received financial compensation. Instead, the federal government invested the funds into climate research.
If you ask me personally, I would have want the money to go to, you know, help in seawall or the coral bleaching, not to come up with another little organisation that they're going to, you know, just going to fly around and study climate change. Climate change is real.
Yessie is now calling on the government to come and see for themselves the real threat his homeland faces.
The government cannot make no decision in the comfort of their couches and in their offices. They really need to come home, come to the Torres Strait and sit with grassroots people.
Carla Grant, NITV News.
Tonight is the State of Origin decider, with Queensland to host New South Wales at a sold-out Suncorp Stadium in Meanjin, Brisbane. Our Queensland correspondent Dan Rennie caught up with former Maroons legend Petro Sevenaceva ahead of the big clash, with the Hall of Famer taking us through his memories of playing in a decider, including his farewell match back in 2012.
A man who represented the Maroons 33 times, an NRL Hall of Famer, Petro Sevenaceva. You played in many deciders yourself. Do you have a favourite origin memory or a favourite memory from here at Suncorp?
Yeah, probably my last game, actually, 2012. It was a decider. Cooper Cronk kicked that winning field goal, and it was a perfect way to retire from State of Origin football with a Queensland Series win.
Also, I wanted to ask you, it's pretty fitting to be standing here in front of the statue of Artie Beetson, and you work with Deadly Choices at the moment and the Artie Beetson Cup. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, look, it's been fantastic, I guess, continuing on the legacy of the great man, you know, what he did for Queensland State of Origin, that iconic moment when he led Queensland out to that first win back in 1980. And then, you know, from what the State of Origin has been built into, it's just an absolute juggernaut now, and it's something that, you know, for all rugby league fans, they love and support. And, yeah, I've been fortunate to work with the Arthur Beetson Foundation. We've got the Future Immortals Tour, so we're a group of retired and former NRL players that go out in the community. We've just come back from a great trip up to Hopevale, and in a few weeks' time, we'll be heading up to Kawanyama.
Petro, what have Queensland got to do to turn things around?
Yeah, we'll certainly need to start better. I think game two, the way New South Wales really took it to us, so we're very physical and they dominated us, especially in that middle third. So I'm sure Billy would have addressed the boys, and it'd be about starting fast and starting with aggression in game three.
This week, over 1,000 young mob from around New South Wales will be taking part in a unique sports carnival, Nations of Origin. Created as a way to get Indigenous and non-Indigenous kids together to celebrate our diverse culture, the event also encourages positive relationships with health, education and police. Now in its 10th year, the tournament has expanded to 146 teams competing in netball, gymnastics and basketball, as well as its original Rugby League Sevens competition. One of the teams has travelled almost 5 hours to be at the Nations of Origin. They've come from Dubbo and Wellington in western New South Wales. Our reporter Ricky Kirby travelled there to see how the Wiradjuri team has been training for the games.
Two towns, one team. These young people from Wellington and Dubbo are representing the Wiradjuri Nation at Nations of Origin. Over the week, they will be competing in basketball, gymnastics and parkour.
So we're taking two boys and girls teams away to Sydney, and we've been preparing the last 10 to 12 weeks, every once a week training sessions. All the kids have been here every week. There's actually not one kid that's actually missed a training session, which is amazing. They're all really committed with each other. I think it's creating that community unity that they want to be part of this project and they want to be a part of the journey.
I like to represent our town
and to show how we actually do it.
Each of them have earned their spot with over 80% school attendance and no negative dealings with police.
I just hope when they finish that they're proud of what they've achieved and they put our town out in Sydney.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're small but we're proud.
I feel pretty proud and excited to play with my brother and also my mate. So, yeah, feels pretty good. We got a pretty decent team. Hopefully we got to put up a fight. Hopefully get a couple of wins and all that. But yeah, no, I think we do have a good chance of winning.
The competition, an opportunity for Indigenous and non-Indigenous young people to come together to represent and celebrate Aboriginal culture.
Feels really good just being able to share our town's culture again. I like having a strong culture, so showing that we're capable of being great people from just a small little town, and with not all the big resources that a big city might have, we can still do crazy things. So being able to just represent it with these nice shirts and everything, it's just a great feeling.
Ricky Kirby, NITV News.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Yama Nayaga Milare Mia Ruby, and you're listening to NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Next up, NITV Radio chats to Leela Smith, CEO of the Aurora Education Foundation, about the recently announced scholarships to support Indigenous health professionals and researchers to complete postgraduate studies or research in a cancer-related field. NITV Radio's Bertrand Tungandami has more.
Cancer is the number one killer in Indigenous communities, and yet only 1% of health practitioners in this space identify as Indigenous. But the situation is about to change with a new funding of $5.9 million put aside by the federal government and in partnership with Aurora Foundation to address this massive gap. And joining me to get some insights into this development is Leela Smith, Aurora Foundation CEO. Leela, welcome to NITV Radio again.
Hi, it's great to be back.
To put things into context, can you just give us some numbers to put the situation in context? Because with numbers, people get a clearer picture of the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Cancer is the leading cause of death for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And you're right that less than 1% of health professionals are Indigenous. You know, when we look at that in terms of diagnosis rates, Indigenous people are 1.5 times more likely, 1.5 times more likely to be diagnosed with cancer. And we all know that Indigenous cancer workforce is important. It's a national priority, but there actually aren't many initiatives that focus on strengthening Indigenous health professionals and researchers through study. So what I love about this is a long-term approach to deal with those really stark statistics that are quite shocking and demand us to take this seriously. And that's what I love about this scholarship. It's a big investment. It's a cohort approach, and it's going to make a real impact on our communities as well.
And how will this scholarship really specifically address the gap and improve cancer outcomes in Indigenous communities?
I can tell you from my experience working in Indigenous education, and particularly through scholarship, the journeys of Indigenous students who are studying, that there are some real challenges that we face to graduation and to getting our careers and careers that are going to make an impact in our community. Things like financial hurdles, caring responsibilities, part-time work, community roles and responsibilities. All of these are things that we need to carry and deal with while we are studying so that we can get a job to help us make a difference in our communities. And a scholarship, it isn't a silver bullet for a smooth path to graduation. It's not a silver bullet for community impact, but it does take a lot of these challenges off the table and allow students to focus more on their studies, focus more on their end game so that they can get through and get the qualifications that they need to make a difference. And in this instance, that's in improving cancer outcomes.
The numbers look good, $120,000 per year for up to 3 years. What other academic well-being and community support will be provided to the recipients of these scholarships?
Thank you for mentioning that. That's actually a really unique element of this scholarship that we are really proud of. We're proud not just to be delivering financial support, but also academic and well-being and community support as well. So we're a First Nations organisation with a lot of experience in scholarship development, and we know that Indigenous students, like all students actually, need holistic support as well. Recipients of this scholarship will receive the benefits of our scholar wellbeing framework. This has referral pathways. We've got a really highly experienced team who are on hand to advise scholars how to navigate the system. We'll have academic experts on retainer to support the scholars, monthly check-ins with those experts, gatherings with the other scholars, gatherings with other people in the Aurora world and our networks as well. This is about supporting them collectively and as a group with experts and wellbeing supports to create a community around them, as well as really, substantive financial support with up to $120,000 per year for up to 3 years.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Luana Grant, and you're listening to NITV Radio. Next is part two of our conversation with Leela Smith, CEO of the Aurora Education Foundation, about the recently announced scholarships to support Indigenous health professionals and researchers to complete postgraduate studies or research in a cancer-related field.
Yeah, you just mentioned the support once they've been approved. But before getting approved, there's a hurdle to go through, which is the selection. And there's even a deadline that was mentioned. I think it's in August, the deadline for people to apply.
That's right. That's correct.
Well, tell us about the selection process, just how it's designed to ensure the chosen students' research directly impacts Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities.
This is a really broad scholarship. This is not for one particular area of cancer. This is for nursing or oncology or public health or cancer policy research. And we are not going to create a hierarchy amongst applicants that will rank one area above the other. The way that we will assess amongst scholarship applicants over whose course or whose research will impact Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, it's by their case that they pitch. So when a student presents an application or a researcher presents an application and is interviewed by the panel, we really want to understand, what are you doing now? How will you in the future impact cancer research or cancer outcomes? And why do you need to do this course? They're three pieces, and when they are tightly fitting together perfectly. This is where I am now. This is what I want to do to improve cancer outcomes. And this is how this course or research is going to get me there. When that is really closely linked and it is a case that is undeniable, that is how we will rank a highly suitable applicant and their proposal, not by their course, not by how old they are. It's about their ability to achieve that endpoint of benefiting Indigenous communities and cancer and the case they make to do that.
And what are the long-term goals within the organisation supporting Indigenous leadership and the change in cancer control besides this scholarship or on top of this scholarship?
One thing I love about this scholarship, it's not about a quick fix solution. This is about building a pipeline of the next generation of leaders in cancer and Indigenous communities. This is about holistic support. This is one scholarship that we're no longer, you know, we want to move away from that patchwork of scholarships approach where Indigenous students are constantly writing applications for scholarships. This is a collective approach. This is a majority Indigenous panel, Indigenous leadership in the team that will be supporting them. This is everything that a scholarship should be for our mob. It's student-centered, it's Indigenous-led, and our long-term goals at Aurora are to keep raising the bar and demanding excellence for our communities, for Indigenous students to achieve their goals, whatever that is, and whether that be in a cancer-related field or otherwise. This is what we stand for at Aurora, and this scholarship fits very neatly within that.
And obviously there'll be many stakeholders. First of all, there are the participants, the people themselves, the communities, then the scholars who will be studying and doing their research. Then you've got universities, you've got Cancer Australia, you've got many organizations involved in the fight against cancer. How does this scholarship program encourage really optimal collaboration to get the best outcome?
I wish you could have seen my email inbox yesterday after we had announced the scholarship. It was stakeholders from all of those sectors that you just mentioned who are so excited to get behind this. It's an extraordinary opportunity that has united all of those sectors, the non-for-profit, the service delivery, the public sector, universities, who are willing to unite and share the news and put applicants forward for this opportunity. I've actually never seen something quite like this. People know that this is important. Those stats that you and I talked about at the start, people feel that. People care about this and they are really excited to get behind this. It's a space that we've been navigating for a while, nearly two decades at Aurora, across the university sector and non-for-profit sector and service delivery sector and governments and private. So we're used to spanning those sectors. But there is something really special about this that has united people and excited and inspired people at another level.
The program is crucial for empowering Indigenous voices. Are there plans for additional initiatives beyond these scholarships, especially to further strengthen Indigenous participation in cancer control efforts?
At this stage, this newest scholarship is our priority. So we really want to focus on getting this right, giving the best support to these scholars, having the highest standards for the process in selecting and supporting and graduating these scholars and researchers. This is our number one goal. What we learn from that, that will then set a very strong foundation for whatever may come next. We'll be running this in parallel to our existing programs, of course, our internship program, our international study tour, our international scholarships. This is our newest focus, and we want to deliver excellence in this. So this is our priority for now, and our partnership with Cancer Australia to assist us to continue to deliver outcomes in cancer is our number one focus right now. And, you know, it's a win-win. Whatever we learn from this, whatever we learn about what it takes to raise the bar, is what we will take to us at our next horizon for our strategic plan.
Well, Leila Smith, thank you very much for taking the time to join us on NITV Radio today. And congratulations on winning this partnership with the federal government on alleviating cancer, this big gap in cancer treatment in First Nations communities.
Thank you. Great to chat. I really appreciate your support. Thank you for sharing the news.
Join the conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Hi, you're listening to the radio of NITV.
Join the conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
And that's all we have time for on today's program. You can listen back to the show anytime online or catch any of our stories on our website at sbs.com.au. NITV Radio will be back on Friday with more stories from right across the country. I'm your host, Luana Grant Mundungor. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day.